All right, so, whoa.
Testing, hello? You hear me?
Testing.
Yes, right. Hello?
So we're all tested out.
Perfect.
The middle person testing is our next guest on the Eric Lang Show, Phil Rosenthal.
Hello.
How are you, Phil?
I'm good. I don't want to wear the headphones.
He's not wearing headphones.
Because that's how I roll, Eric.
I'm
a rebel.
I like that.
I'm going bareback.
I think... Jeff, you got to get on this. This is a very raw... People like the... That's me.
Oh.
Am I there? People, this is
looking for number two.
Phil, the no headphones is a whole new thing for me. I've never had anyone turn down the headphones, although you're the fifth, so it's a new thing.
Kelly Oxford wore the headphones?
She wore them. Yeah, well, part of it
is. She looked good in them, too.
She's very beautiful.
I know.
I mean, she would look good in, you know.
I look like this.
You and I share a lot, right? We both started behind the camera.
Yep.
And now we're in front of the camera.
You're not. You're a friggin' podcast.
It's a podcast, but I also know. But I have a travel show.
I know. You do the golf show.
What?
Amazing.
How does your experience with that? You know.
Well, I studied theater.
Wait, I didn't know that.
Yeah, my whole life. Here it is. Quickly, right?
Yeah.
I watched a lot of TV as a kid. I loved the Honeymooners, and all I wanted to do was be that. And when you're a kid, you don't know there's writing, directing, producing. You don't know any. You just see them, and if you're like me, you fall in love with that, and you want to be that. So all I wanted to be was funny. Funny. So in school, the only outlet for that without getting thrown out of class is the school play. I never wanted to be a serious actor. I just wanted to be funny. But there's no, like, comedian school. There's no, like, right? Get, like, SNL school.
Right.
Until you graduate college and you study improv a little bit, which I did. Tried stand-up once. Terrible.
Why was it terrible? I feel like you'd be good at it.
I thought I would be good at it, but I hated the struggle of it. In other words, I did an open mic night once and at 19, and that was enough. Because the people in the front of the bar at the 10 tables there, fine. But I couldn't hear them because right behind them was the bar. And they didn't care who was on the stage at open mic night.
Yeah.
They wouldn't even listen to the musicians. It was just background noise. When you're used to being on stage and being in the school play, you're used to the audience listening to you.
Right.
And I thought I was bombing because of all the talking. How could you not think otherwise?
Yeah.
I couldn't even get their attention.
I'm sure even famous comedians feel that way.
I guess, but they muscle through, and I don't have the muscle.
So you didn't do that anymore.
So I didn't do that anymore, and I just struggled as an actor in New York for years until some friends of mine and I wrote something for ourselves to be in, and that became successful. It became successful enough for me to see that, maybe there was another way to stay in show business without the acting, which I couldn't stand because I wasn't acting. I was being rejected over and over.
This is so... Did you know this, Jeff?
Yeah.
This
Tony is... and Tina's Wedding was that original
How
play.
Do you know that?
I do my research.
Wow. So he doesn't have to.
Jeff does a lot.
That's really good.
Yeah, we try to be the same person.
And the same year, a friend of mine, Alan Kirschenbaum, came to my apartment with a word processor. A blue and gray metal box, which is a fantastic in-between typewriter and computer. In fact, I would argue now it's better for a writer to have a word processor than a computer because your computer is hooked up to the greatest distraction known to man.
Yeah.
You don't get a lot of writing done on the computer. Not me, anyway. I'm terrible. So
even still?
Oh, yeah. I'm addicted to the phone. I'm the worse than any kid you know.
Interesting.
Yeah, terrible. Because I think I have the attention deficit thing, and I think the phone is popular because it plugs into that side of all of us.
But do you believe that attention deficit disorder is like a thing that you're born with or a thing that you like learn?
Could be both.
Right.
I know the phone exacerbates it.
Yeah.
It has to.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Because it's a giant distractor.
I just started putting my phone in another room when I'm getting ready for bed because I will not get off it.
I don't have that discipline.
Yeah,
I'll go one step further. This is how bad I am. I'll get up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night. Yeah. Right? I'm a little older than you, so that happens. You have that to look forward to. And when I come back to bed, the first thing I do is check my phone, and it could be an hour.
At 3 in the morning?
Yeah.
And what do you get? There's nothing there.
Email, Twitter.
Right.
The world is there. It's crazy. What do you mean there's nothing there? The world is
there. But nothing that can't wait.
Oh, tell that to my brain. Let's talk to my brain.
We always need some form of stimulus.
I don't know what. You know, I come back to bed. I have a little trouble falling back to sleep. And rather than lay there like a prisoner in jail,
right.
I pick up the phone for entertainment.
Right.
Well, and think maybe if I read something, it'll put me back to bed. But of course,
never.
It's bombarding my brain with light.
No.
So,
and the stories themselves are only more likely waking you up, causing you excitement or anxiety.
Yes, like reading about the government.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's a great one. So it's funny for me because for me, I sort of despised those on camera. Not really, but I would never be on camera because I'm a documentary filmmaker and I have sort of integrity and I'm, you know, Werner Herzog and stuff like that. And so when someone said, will you be on camera? I was like, look, I'm broke enough to say yes, even though I don't think that's a good idea. So I don't know. For me, it was a weird transition. You had a large swath of your career was, you know, then behind the camera.
Yeah.
What was it like getting back in front of it for this? Was it exciting that like back
it
in
was,
the saddle?
It was easy because I'm not acting.
Right.
It's just me. And I'm doing what I love, so it's a joy.
Is that the definition of hosting? Or what is that? It's not hosting.
I don't feel like I'm hosting anything.
What
I feel
is
like
it?
I'm living a dream, right? Every single thing in the show is me having a good time. It's that if I'm not, it doesn't make the cut, right?
Can you give a little background on the show for me?
Sure. It all started with an episode of Everybody Loves Raymond. I asked Ray where he was going on his hiatus after the first year. He said, I'm going to the Jersey Shore. And I said, that's nice. You ever been to Europe? And he said, nah. I said, why not? He said, because I'm not really interested in other cultures.
No way.
Yes.
As a backup for those who don't know what your position on Everybody Loves Raymond is, you created it based on
mostly his real life with my life and my family thrown in as characters because I didn't know the personalities of his family.
Okay.
So when he said he's not really interested in other cultures, a little bell went off in my head, said, that's an episode. We're going to go, if we're on lucky enough to be on the air a while, CBS will pay for an episode where we go to Italy.
Right.
Right? Where his family's from. And he'll get turned on to traveling. He'll go over there as him with that attitude that he's not interested and come back as me, someone very excited about travel, and especially Italy and the food in Italy.
Right.
Well, 3 years later, we do it. And with the character that I wrote, you know, he gets woke. And what I saw happen to the character happened to the person. Like Ray got it.
Whoa.
Like he wanted to have pizza every night and gelato every night. And then when he was done with gelato, he noticed another pizza place all in the same night. We didn't have that one. I'm just like, there's always tomorrow. No, let's have it now. Okay, so he got it. You got it. Look how old everything is. Wow. Right. Yes, Ray. It's called Europe. So I got high from that. I got like there's nothing, you know, even with golf, there's nothing better than turning people on to something you love.
Yeah.
That's just human nature, I think.
Yeah.
And so this was in the back of my head since that show, which was filmed in the year 2000.
Whoa.
18 years ago.
Okay.
Since then, I want to do this show. Now, Raymond went to another 5 years. After that, I tried to do other shows. I made a movie where I went to Russia to help the Russians.
That was the first thing I saw you did.
That's it.
It was incredible.
So that was a kind of transition to being in front of the camera.
Let me explain. So this was a documentary that you decided to make after some Russians decided they wanted to remake Everybody Loves Raymond.
They wanted to make Everybody Loves Kostya.
This is one of the best documentaries I've ever seen. I tell everybody to see it all the time.
Thanks. It's on Netflix now.
It's called Exporting Raymond.
Yeah.
And it's on Netflix.
Right now.
And it's so unbelievable.
Thank you.
And I watched it on my way to Moscow. And
what?
Remember you, I believe, maybe
were
I'm,
we on the same flight?
Well, that's where we met the first time.
Yes.
I wanted to tell this story.
Yeah.
You and I met on a plane.
Yeah.
And I mean, was this one of the best flights of your life?
It was so much fun.
It was so much fun.
Yeah.
There were 8 seats in our little cabin.
Right. One of them was Ted Sarandos. Well,
he was sitting in my seat when I got on the plane.
Hilarious.
I didn't know who he was.
Yeah.
And I was like, here's my thing is that...
And we didn't have a deal yet. We didn't know.
Yeah, you guys didn't have anything.
I just barely had met him.
Yeah. And I'm scraping away on my golf documentary.
Right.
And when I find out that who... Because I didn't know who he was, and he was just in my chair. And I was like, get out of my chair, you jerk. And then, you know, and then we got along, and Whitney was on our flight. And
Whitney Cummings,
There was...
And we all ate together.
Yeah, and your friend was on the flight. You guys were going to... where were you going? Somewhere in Italy. Anyway, it was the first time I ever had caviar, and you walked me through the process like a professional.
Did you like it?
I loved it. Yeah.
Are you now he's on $1,000 a day habit.
I can, yeah, exactly. I
That's
need
where
to
my paycheck goes.
Yeah. So, you know, anyway, backing up, we tangent, you were continue on.
So I do the documentary.
Yeah.
And people saw that.
And that's your idea.
The documentary was actually the head of Sony's idea.
So you're knee deep in this process of actually going back and
forth. No, actually it was my
forth.
Idea, but here's how it happened, very quickly. He asked me if I wanted to go to Russia and see how Sony works with the Russians making sitcoms. They invented the sitcom in Russia.
Whoa.
Never existed.
What?
They
Even
had
in America?
Sketch shows. They had sketch shows in Russia, and they had soap operas. They did not have sitcoms.
Whoa.
The Nanny was the first sitcom ever done in Russia, an adaptation of the American Fran Drescher Nanny, where they took the scripts, translated them to Russian, hired Russian actors, did the show, big hit.
Big hit.
Okay? So then now it's a business, taking American scripts and turning them into Russian sitcoms. Some have very little adaptation, some need more adaptation. But he said, you got to see the people over there. You got to see how we work with them. You know, the head of comedy, his only previous experience is working in laser beams.
And
I said, yeah, that's what I said. What? And I said, why? He said, a new technology. Sitcom.
So you're going over there merely as a curious traveler.
I say to him when he says, do you want to go over there and observe how we work with them and then come back and write a comedy, write a feature film, a fictional comedy about a showrunner who goes to Russia to have a show translated. I said, wait a minute.
It's brilliant.
If this really exists, why not make a documentary about what would really happen? He goes, I love that. Would you be the guy? And I said, yeah, I want to make the documentary.
Amazing.
He goes, make the documentary. Be in the documentary. Do Raymond over there. So I did it like an idiot.
And so you like an idiot. Yeah. So this is your first time back on camera.
Yep, first time ever, think, on camera.
And I mean, my experience is when I make Adventures in Golf is some things are real and some things are not as real, but they need to be done in a way that feels real for the audience. For example, you know, we'll do an interview and I'll need to ask questions a second time, or we'll go through a place and I'll be like, oh, look at that.
Yes.
Even though I've already seen it. Did that happen for you at all in Exporting Raymond?
I'm trying to not do that ever. I'm trying to make it
me
real
too.
All the time. And the way I did it was, if I'm the director of Exporting Raymond, here was my brilliant direction. You ready?
Okay.
Because I have to be in it, too.
Yeah.
Let's get two cameras.
Yes.
Most documentaries use one. So if we have two, and the whole movie is about how they're going to react to me and how I'm reacting to them, if we have two cameras, we've covered it.
Yeah.
I don't have to think about directing a movie.
The coverage in the film is really brilliant. You can intercut scenes really well.
Exactly right. Without faking anything.
Yeah, good for you.
Because I don't want to fake it. The moment you smell fake, you're out.
Yeah, I fake everything. I apologize. It's a shorter show, though.
So that was the secret.
Right.
And I carried that over to this show as well.
So you come back and
you know, years go by.
Yeah.
And I've never forgotten this dream of doing the food and travel show, and I tried it in different iterations, little tests here and there that just happened to pop up. Very small company. I went with a buddy, just eating around L.A. Nobody interested. Famous chef says, do you want to go to Italy with me and be my sidekick, and we'll explore Italy together? Of course, I would love nothing more than that. We did a little test. Nobody wanted.
Shooting these like sort of sizzle pilots.
A little bit with different sponsors and different people.
But it's just not working.
Not working.
Then why?
American Express, I hadn't hit the formula right yet.
Ah, okay.
Okay? American Express comes to me. We like the idea of you. We saw you're Exporting Raymond. We like the idea of you going places. I said, so does my wife. They said, you want to get a famous chef, again, with a famous chef, and do a week in London, and then we'll see what happens. So I go and I do it, and it's terrible. It's a week of 27 high-end white tablecloth restaurants in 7 days. That's hell.
No,
when you think about it,
it's not good.
It's great once or twice or three times at the most.
Yeah.
But on your fifth meal in a fancy restaurant that lasts 3-4 hours, you want to die.
Yeah, it's all the same.
I did 27. And it was all about the big famous chef because he was big and famous.
Money.
Yes. So that never went anywhere because it wasn't good. They did a couple of evenings of American Express card member events where the big chef had a dinner and I co-hosted the dinner. It was nothing.
Yeah.
But what I did get was I edited a couple of scenes together that served as templates, things that I liked. And we started taking that around town, and PBS liked it. And they asked me if I had another idea, and I said, yeah, how about I go around the world, and I try to get you to travel by showing you the best places in the world to eat. And they said, where do you want to go? And we were off, 6 episodes.
Amazing.
Yeah, we won the James Beard Award for Best Food and Travel Show, our first 6 shows. Then, I don't know why, PBS didn't pick up the show. You'd have to talk to them.
We'll call them.
But Netflix saw it, and they wanted it. So a year or two later, after all the legal mishigas is taken care of, I'm on Netflix, and the show is now called a Netflix original, which means it has a new title, Somebody Feed Phil. It has a theme song by Lake Street Dive, which I love. This is the big difference between this and PBS. Theme song, and it's shot in 4K, ultra high definition. So beautiful.
So, you know, going back to the formula you mentioned. That's everything. That's it.
Yeah.
We're done?
We're done.
This is like, it's only been like 8 minutes. So what we talk about the formula, you know, maybe like, I'm curious to know when you talk about Raymond, like, what you must have discovered a formula there as well.
Like, yeah. Raymond lies and then gets found out that he lied.
That's it.
And, you know, it's like the Honeymooners. Ralph has a get rich quick scheme. It doesn't work.
Right.
Every show finds its like sweet spot.
Right.
Now, obviously, I'm simplifying. That's not what every show is about. But there are a lot of shows where he gets caught lying.
Right.
Because all he wants. You know, you always have to have your main character has to want something. Yeah. We have a very odd want with Raymond. He wants to be left alone. That's not a very proactive choice. And yet, it was relatable to many of us.
Right.
And seemed to work because everyone else was so great as well. And he was brilliant at playing leave me alone.
Right.
Right?
He is really good at that.
Really good.
Well, do you travel anymore for fun or is it mostly just for work?
No, I actually love it. After I do a full season of thing of the show, maybe yes, I'd like to be home a little bit as well. But as soon as I can, a couple of weeks later, I'm like, where do you want to go?
Right. And where do you typically go? I mean, it's different every time.
I love Italy the most. Afraid to say, but I do have a favorite. So far in my life, Italy wins.
Amazing.
I haven't been everywhere, but I've been a bunch of places. And I don't know, you ever have an affinity for a place that you just feels like a second home?
Yeah.
Like that, you're most comfortable or most knocked out by it or so in love with just walking down the street there? Pretty great.
Do you think you'd ever settle there or anything like that?
It could happen.
I feel
Let's
like
see
I
how bad
see
things get here.
How bad they get. Do you have like a? Do you have
I
like
do
any?
I love LA. I really do.
And LA's
I'm a
good.
Die-hard
LA's
New Yorker.
Yeah.
I was like a Woody Allen New Yorker.
Did you have the thing where you were like sort of a self-hating Angelino?
Hated it at first.
For how
when
long?
I first came years.
Years.
I couldn't stand it. I really couldn't stand it. I thought it was shallow, vacuous. It was bright and smoggy at the same time.
Yeah.
This is, you know, 30 years ago now.
Yeah, it was worse then.
It was much worse. Yeah. There was nowhere good to eat.
No.
And then slowly but surely, oh, that restaurant's good. Oh, I get it. Oh, the car means freedom. Oh, the weather is kind of nice every day. Mm. Oh, I'm getting paid to work at a job I like.
Yeah.
That changes your life.
People seem happy.
Right? Oh, I can afford a house. Oh, I can get married. Oh, I can have children.
Right.
Things happen, and soon you fall in love with the place.
Yeah.
And look, the restaurant scene. Look at it.
It's doing
really
well.
Say LA's the best restaurant town in America.
Really?
Yes. Even more than New York.
Because
at the moment.
Just, is it just the new restaurants, or is it like they're getting more experimental, or what is that?
Diversity.
Ah.
We have everything. The biggest populations of people outside their native homelands in the world are in Los Angeles.
Is that true?
Yeah. Japanese, Korean, Chinese, the San Gabriel Valley. The largest population of Chinese people in the world outside of China.
That's
true.
That's incredible.
That's not a Chinatown. That's like a China county.
Yeah. China
right?
state.
You can visit the different provinces of China by just going to the different neighborhoods.
No way. Really?
That's true.
They all exist.
I think almost all of them. They're, I mean, Sichuan food, like you can't believe. These are the best Chinese restaurants in America.
How far will you go for dinner on like a Wednesday night?
Well, you know, there are great restaurants downtown, but going east at night is hell.
It's hell.
Unless you want to eat late. And I'm old, so I don't.
Yeah. Dinner at 4:30.
I like eating around the neighborhood.
Right.
I do.
Right.
Better to go west.
What do you like around here? You go to Angelini?
Sure, I love it's that amazing.
Place. I love that place.
And the little place that opened right next door is so sweet and great for breakfast. People should go.
I'll go check it out.
It's great.
Do
or
you,
lunch.
What about Japanese? Where do you go for Japanese?
Oh, we have the best sushi in America.
Yeah.
You see Japanese businessmen getting off the plane and coming directly with their suitcases to these sushi bars because the sushi is as good as Tokyo,
yeah.
but probably half the price of Tokyo. Yeah.
Oh, you know, I'm going to Tokyo.
Oh, you got to see.
Let's talk Tokyo for
a
second.
You got to watch the episode Tokyo from I'll Have What Phil's Having, which is also still on Netflix.
Right. Oh, yeah, they brought the old episodes over.
They brought the old episodes over.
Great.
So by old, I mean last year.
Different title.
Yes. But watch that show. Go to pbs.org, and you have a list of all the restaurants I went to.
Oh, that's great. They put that up there.
They did.
And so you can literally relive your trip.
When are you airing this?
Could I basically syndicate your show?
Why not?
I think we'll do it right before I leave, March 19th.
This will air?
Yeah.
So by then, my website will be up.
Ah, perfect. What's
my website is going to be called philrosenthalworld.com.
Okay.
And it'll be everything that I'm involved with, but especially a program guide with everywhere I've eaten.
Well, that's amazing.
And all the places you can eat and visit and even hotels. And, you know, I think it's good to have this practical information that I benefited from.
Right.
Right? It's not just my research.
Yeah, where did
it's
you
research
get all your
from
info?
The best people who do this for a living. You know, I work with the production company 0.0. which was John Belushi's grade point average in the movie Animal House. And they are brilliant. They do the Bourdain show. So they have 18 years experience of doing travel shows, food shows.
Yeah,
they have boots on the ground. They tell you where the new hot spots are.
Is that a large part of how you kind of come to make these things happen?
That's at least 50%.
Wow.
And another percentage is me just going on my phone and seeing, like, best restaurants in Lisbon. And you never just trust one source. You cross-reference.
How but do you cross-reference? Between actual humans or, like, Google plus
everything,
others?
Everything.
Wow.
So the other real humans, that's the best.
Right.
And then you start to see, oh, The Guardian in London has a review about this place.
Right.
Oh, the Yelp over there has a review.
Because for something, you're not trying to completely discover something. You're trying to experience something. Is that true?
I love discovering stuff. We leave room in the schedule for serendipity.
Ah,
where
you do.
We'll be in the city, and let's say we're not filming that night. Still got to eat, got to have dinner, and we'll find a place.
Yeah.
Maybe someone that we shot with says, this place has amazing fried chicken.
Right.
Oh, let's go tonight. Okay, we go. Guess what? We're filming there tomorrow.
Right.
And I'll bring someone else over.
And so how often do you schedule to shoot somewhere that you end up not using?
Oh, there's, you know, we shoot a lot. We shoot
really?
For 10 days and we can only use an hour. So there's a lot that doesn't get seen. But also on that website, we might be showing you some deleted scenes that were perfectly great places. We just didn't have the room.
Right. And so for 10 days, how many people are you traveling with?
16 people.
16, okay.
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
How many is in your adventures in golf crew?
Three.
One camera, one sound?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then I carry the bags.
See, if you had another camera,
yeah.
Right? How big is your camera?
We use A7Ss, so they're about as big as a cup of coffee. It's pretty remarkable how small they are.
You can't have one more?
I mean, sometimes we do them for the interviews. We'll do a wide and two tights.
Right.
But a lot of times, you know, I mean, I do a short show. It's like 12 minutes.
Ah.
And we have 3 days.
Got it.
So,
yeah, you get it.
Yeah, you know?
You don't need it.
I don't think so. I mean, we've done all different versions of it. We've done three cameras. Now we're going back to two.
Oh.
And, yeah, I mean, it's a whole interesting thing. I mean, are you? Do you also produce your show, or how does that work? Do you?
It's
part
my
do you,
show.
Do you
I
enjoy
get to
that?
Love it.
I love the producing.
Here's
of
the
it.
Thing. I love every aspect of show business. When you ask me, what's it like to be in front of the camera, right? It's fine, because I love all of it. I love producing, directing, writing, editing, performing. I love every aspect of show business except the business.
It sucks. The money, the
contracts. In show business, the business gets in the way of the show.
Right.
Right? That's what prevents you from doing the show is the business in show business. It doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't.
All it is roadblocks and you can't do this and you should change that and we're going to make you wait for 2 years before we say yes to you. What?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
No.
I heard someone describe it as Hollywood is like a bunny factory, and the conveyor belt is just filled with knives and sledgehammers and lighters. And every once in a while, a bunny makes it out without unscathed, and that's a good film or a good show.
That's genius.
Yeah. Simon said that from what's that?
Simon Cowell?
Not Simon Cowell.
He could.
Simon Thomas. Simon Thomas from...
But that's right. I like that. I don't know why they chose bunnies as the metaphor, but that's...
Yeah, stuffed animals, not actual bunnies.
Oh.
Stuffed bunnies.
It's a little better with real bunnies.
You like it better with me?
It's got a little more dark...
You don't play golf.
I find that, Eric, that life is frustrating enough.
No golf for you.
You've never tried it. Mini golf. I've even gone to the driving range.
See, but I feel like you owe it to Raymond. I mean, you got him to travel. He owes me. He still owes you?
I think so, yes.
Were you involved in casting him? I mean, you guys were friends before? Or, no. I mean, this is a known
story. We met over lunch. He was looking for, him and his people were looking for a writer to create a show for him. Mm. I was looking for actors or comedians to create a show for. That's how it works. Mm. And you meet over lunch or breakfast or dinner or meeting and you talk. And I don't know, we were both from Queens. We had similar backgrounds of, crazy parents. And his was Italian, mine was Jewish. It's not a big difference.
Yeah.
All problems are solved with food, and the mother never leaves you alone. And so, I don't know. I don't even think I was his first choice.
And you become co-creators at that point. You write it together. How does that work?
I actually wrote it myself.
Huh.
After talking to him for a long time, I went off and wrote the pilot.
Amazing.
And I filled in what I didn't know about his family with the personality of my family.
Was it very easy at that point?
No.
It's
everything's
not.
Hard.
Everything's hard.
Every moment. And here's the thing. People say, did you know it would be this? But I didn't know if one person at CBS would like my little script and let us make a pilot. That's how far ahead you're thinking.
Yeah.
And then everything that happens after that is a goddamn miracle.
It really is.
It's like they say, it's like you won the jackpot. No, it's like I won the jackpot over and over and over again.
Because, it was interesting to hear Jordan Peele, who won Best Original.
Genius.
20 times he almost threw it away
because
he thought no one was going to like it. I mean,
yes.
Can you dial that into your own inspirational message to those out there that want to create that are just stuck?
There is no easy way. If it comes easy to you, you should just thank God that something you did right in your life is now paying off. But it's always going to be a struggle. Always. You have to trust your thing or not. The people who persevere the most, usually, I'm not the first person to say, it took 10 years to get this show going.
Yeah.
Right?
Overnight success takes 10 years.
Yeah. It happens.
Yeah.
Look how long movies take.
Oof.
I can't even. I've written a couple of screenplays. I hate it.
the writing of it or the process
Every part of
getting it produced?
I hate writing it because it's too long and you have to think a lot.
Right.
And it's in your mind and you're obsessing and it's just, how do you keep it all together? A long movie, right? I could barely keep a sitcom script together in my head.
Right.
So that's like, God bless everybody who can do that. But then the notes and they change everything and before you know it, you have shit and you didn't even, it's not even what you wanted to do.
Right.
So you got to hold that vision, right? Have a strong vision. It has to be undeniable.
What do you
mean? That's the only thing that gets through.
For you.
It has to be undeniable. As it almost has to be a fact that this is good. That people may not want it for different reasons, but you have to make something that no one could say isn't good.
Hmm.
Isn't, and by good I mean, does it achieve what it sets out to achieve? And is that thing even worth achieving?
But isn't there something about when you make something that's controversial that polarizes people? I mean, what do you make of that? Someone says, if you're not making something that somebody hates, you haven't made something. I mean, I don't know if I believe it, but just I'm questioning you.
Well, those things still have to pass the good test to me.
Right. Oh, for
sure. In other words, controversial for controversial's sake has no value to me.
Right.
And everything, obviously, is what I'm saying is subjective, right? It's my opinion. But there are things in life where you go, okay, that may not be my cup of tea, but you can't tell me, let's say, Breaking Bad. You're never going to tell me that that's not good, right? That premise of the science teacher who's diagnosed with cancer and decides to leave something for his family by going into drug dealing, that's not a good premise.
Yeah, everyone would agree.
That's good.
Yeah.
And then the execution of it was way beyond good.
Yeah.
Right? To become, I think, Best drama series ever.
Really?
That's what I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
I need to watch that because I've never seen it.
Oh, you! I envy you.
You're missing out on a lot, Eric.
No, I envy you.
I have a hard time with shows.
Why?
Because it's like a big thing. Like it's like
commitment.
It's like it. Yeah, it'd be like visiting Iceland and then being like, "You're gonna stay here for 2 years." Like I just want to. Like that's why I like shows that have one season, because it's like I can watch the season and get done, and then I'm moving on.
Have you seen The Sopranos?
Commitment. No, I can't do it.
Wow.
Sopranos.
So you've never been
six
hooked
feet
on
under.
A show?
No. No.
Have you seen my show with the little traveling?
Yeah, I've definitely seen that. Yeah, no, I saw that
He's
before.
Lying, isn't he?
No,
well,
not.
I've seen it at least.
I was almost on that. You were
that's
shooting
right.
It while we were on the plane.
I'm leaning back with the mic. Are you still back. Good?
Oh, you're perfect.
Wow, yeah. I'm like a rock star now.
This is good. You're getting comfortable. Jeff, you got anything?
Jeff's got a serious question. Well, I was curious, brewing. You both love to travel. So
yeah.
For the two of you, you arrive to a brand new city you've never been to before. What is the first thing that you do instinctually?
I love that question.
It's a good
what
one.
Do you do, Eric?
I usually try to beat the jet lag and walk around as much as possible.
That's what I do. And I'm not even thinking jet lag. I just can't wait to get out there and see what's there.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
We should do a show together.
Like just explore the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Wow, there might be something great to eat right next door.
Yeah.
There might be some attraction you don't know.
Yeah.
Right? There may be a park that's great for running in the morning when I go, right? Yeah,
something you weren't planning on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, what is it that you really love? I mean, because there's got to be one thing that goes beyond like, you know, parks and food and anything like that you love about travel. There's got to be one, people?
The show is about meeting the people. The food and the humor is just a way to get you in. Because I know if you're like me, the food is the main attraction, right? We plan our vacations even around it. But the first thing I do is, how's the food over there in Lisbon?
Yeah.
Right? I want to know.
It's not that good in Lisbon.
It's phenomenal.
Really?
Phenomenal.
I couldn't get down with the Portuguese food. I don't like Spanish food either.
All right, we're done.
We're done. That's a wrap.
And he's never seen Breaking Bad. So
yeah, I mean, he's just, geez. He thinks I'm lying
like
about
Eric?
Watching the show.
What do you like about Eric?
Oh, jeez. Jeff's not yet. He's a. Are you a co-host? What are you?
He seems like a
sort
co-host.
Sort of an omniscient presence. He's pop in and out.
I title him as producer.
Yeah.
And for a while, he didn't have a mic. and the people said, get Jeff a mic. There's actually a hashtag.
Get Jeff a mic.
Get Jeff...
Really?
Yeah.
I'm glad he has a mic.
Me too.
So he seems more interesting than you.
He's more interested. I'm interested.
No, you don't. What's not to like about fresh seafood and pastries and what don't you like about?
Well, I don't like gluten. I actually made you some paleo cookies. Do you want to try it?
Yeah.
They're not.
Let's try it.
Where'd they go?
Look. What is it? Made with meat?
Just take a nibble.
What is it?
They're made with coconut flour.
Okay.
And coconut sugar. They're not my best. I'm kind of working on the recipe. Real honest opinion, please.
It's very wet. It's really coconutty.
It's too coconutty. You don't have to eat it all.
It's sweet.
It's sweet.
So paleo is no gluten.
Yeah. I think I need to go back
to
almond flour.
What's holding it together?
I don't know. Your mouth, basically.
Well... No, everyone would like that because it's coconut and chocolate.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just great.
There's no gluten.
It's like a Mounds bar.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm going to work on it. I'll get back to you.
I think it's great.
I'm going to pause the opening of the bakery.
You're going to have a bakery?
I would like to.
By the way, what's wrong with that? That's fine.
You like
thought
that.
It wasn't good?
Jeff, he likes it. I feel like we did pretty good.
Yeah. Do you like it?
I do. He's made another batch, which I thought was one step up.
Why? What was better?
I'm on multiple. Well, we don't know yet. We're trying to backwards engineer it because a neighbor gave me the batter for the first batch I ever made. They were incredible.
But
now,
so the wetness is because there's no dry flour in it,
yeah.
Right? There's
maybe,
no...
Maybe I need to mix in almond flour.
Is there eggs in it?
There's an egg.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very bizarre. There's coconut... what is it? Coconut?
Coconut flour?
No. Coconut oil? Coconut oil? Virgin coconut oil?
That's the only kind I use.
Yeah. It tastes like the beach.
It's good.
It's good?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I appreciate
you did
that.
Well, thank
I
you.
I feel very validated. I was expecting a scathing review.
No. I'm just praying you don't ask me to play golf.
Going back, I can't believe you never played golf with Raymond because he loves it.
He would give up acting to be a pro golfer.
A lot
All
of people say
All he wants
this.
Is to be in the pro-am and make that cut.
Have you heard?
They made a movie about him.
Yeah.
Him and Kevin James.
Yeah.
You saw it.
No, I haven't seen it. How have I not seen that?
It's kind of fun. Because they're both idiots and they're trying to make the cut.
Sam Jackson, in his rider, had to be, they had to buy him a membership at the nearest country club for every film.
And they, that's hundreds of thousands of dollars?
Yeah, it's probably about, well, temporary. Also, you know, I think you get a deal if you're...
Celebrity,
yeah. But it's incredible the amount of people who get addicted to it. But I wanted to go back. So
the president seems addicted, doesn't he?
Sorry, the who? The thing I thought was interesting was how the show that you make is not about food. And I really always say the show that I make is not about golf. It's about us, you know?
The people who play golf.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, mine's about the people who, you know, are centered around food and stuff and love it. And but there's so many great people that you meet outside of even the restaurants. Just people who love their town, and I try to meet them as well, experts in different fields.
Have you ever eaten anything like testicles or anything like that?
Not on purpose. Maybe someone slipped one in somewhere that I didn't know. But I'm not like the adventurer guy. I'm not Bourdain or Andrew Zimmern. I'm the opposite.
Yeah.
In fact, the way I sold this show was with one line. I said, I'm exactly like Anthony Bourdain, if he was afraid of everything.
That's pretty good.
That's it.
Yeah.
And I fill that niche. Right. But I think it's a big niche because I think most people are more like me, sitting on the couch looking at Bourdain going, he's amazing. I'm never doing that.
I'm never doing it.
Nope.
Have you interfaced with Anthony at all?
Met him once years ago, and he was really nice.
Yeah. It's very intense.
He was like, I love that he was kind of sweet and not cool like the persona in the show.
Hmm.
Now, maybe he's morphed into that more. I don't know.
I saw him recently, and he was like that.
He was like what?
He was chain-smoking, wearing Ray-Bans, standing outside of a chopper. And I was like,
well, that's pretty cool.
Wait a minute.
That's exactly like me, except the opposite.
You're sort of hyperventilating outside of Uber. Do you need to go?
No, it just, there were so many buzzings just now. I didn't like it.
All the buzzings.
The buzzings.
Where do you get your news?
Where do I get my news? Well, we all have the phone and you get the alerts, right?
No, but I mean, do you use an app or what do you read The Week? Are you BuzzFeed, New York Times, LA Times?
Mostly on the phone. I read on the phone.
Yeah. Swipe over to the news.
I see an alert and then I go for it. And then in the morning I get the New York Times delivered on my phone.
Right.
And I read the New York Times and I read whatever's relevant and I watch MSNBC and CNN like everybody.
And then what do you do for fun other than eat and write and travel?
I don't do writing for fun. Writing is horrible. Right? Listen, my whole adolescence was spent avoiding homework. So it's kind of ironic that my job now is homework.
Yeah, that's true. You're literally, I mean, but, you know, it must propel you forward with success.
Not necessarily. I haven't sat down to write a script in a while.
What about the show? You don't come up with a treatment or anything like that?
There are treatments, yes. And you could call it writing. And then afterwards, you know, I have, there's a guy, Henry, who does some research and he'll write some historical facts about the place for me. I'll put them into my words. And then as I'm watching the footage, I'm saying, I need a little bit of explanation here. Maybe he'll dummy in something and then I'll just write it in my voice. And sometimes I'll think of stuff.
Hmm.
And everything, when I talk to camera in the show, I'm writing that. It just happens to be writing on the spot.
But there must be times where you're talking to the camera and you're like, wait, no, let me say that again. Like, because for me, that happens. Like, I'll be wanting to make a point and then I flub it or then I come up with a better way of saying it. So it seems like a documentary, but really, I know what I want to say.
Right. There's always going to be a flub. And if I do flub, I'll just start over.
Right.
But I don't know. For some reason, that doesn't seem... When I'm talking to camera... That's more like set.
Right.
But I'll never go back if you and I were doing a scene where we're eating and, you know, it's very rare that they'll say, oh, we missed what you just said. Could you repeat that? I hate doing that.
Yeah, that's very
hard to do. I'll do it once in a while, but I don't like doing it. And by the way, 9 times out of 10, I see that it looks fake in the show and I cut it.
Right. What's your, aside from obviously, I'm sure, experiencing the food and the people is your favorite part. But aside from that, production-wise, what do you like? Planning, the traveling, the logistics with the other people, the post or, you know, test screenings. What do you really get the most out of?
The joy of being there and doing it.
Yeah.
That's everything. I'm getting paid to be on vacation, really. Now I live better than a rock star.
Right.
You know about rock stars. You know that when you go, your journey is the plane, the car, the hotel, the venue, the car, the plane, the hotel, the venue. That's it.
Insane fans.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's not seeing a place.
Mm-mm.
I'm there to see the place.
Yeah.
So my venue is the city, and I'm there for 10 days. You're doing one-nighters if you're a rock star, right?
Yeah.
Two-nighters, maybe.
Yeah, well, when Steve and I would travel, I would try to say, let's spend in a couple extra days. And we did that multiple times. And
that's everything,
it was
right?
interesting because we had a lot of fun, but there was a level of stress for her that I wasn't privy to because I didn't have to perform in 3 days.
Ah.
So in a way, it seems like for rock stars—
Never got used to it?
For her or for me?
For her.
She didn't really like touring, you know? And I think most musicians don't, at least after they've done it once or twice, you know?
But the thing that you did of having the cushion days—
Yeah.
That
I think that helped.
Help.
I think that helped a lot because, you know, it was time to really soak in what's happening. But, you know, I think at some point you really just sort of, you just want to get home, you know?
Of course. Yeah, if you're on the road too long.
Which is tough, you know, because luckily, you know, I was given the choice this year producing season 3 of Adventures in Golf. Like, should I do it all in one trip?
Right.
Or multiple trips? And for a few reasons, unfortunately, it's more expensive to do multiple trips.
Yeah.
But I just thought it would actually be better, the final product, you know? How many will you do at once?
Two at a time.
You do two at a time?
Uh-huh.
I'm getting a phone call, apparently.
Oh, that's your buzzing.
I'm sorry. I thought I turned it off. I don't know. It's some 858.
That's all right. If you want to take it, you could take it. We'll all listen.
I'm sure it's just someone like, what, do you get, like, what's up with the phone calls? The telemarketers. Do they have your
Jerry
number?
Jerry Seinfeld now?
Yeah.
What's up with the phone call?
I mean, Jerry Seinfeld or friends? You're Jerry Seinfeld, right? Gotta be.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
It's more my age.
Yeah. There's a big difference. Jerry Seinfeld or friends, Jeff?
I think I'm a little more Seinfeld.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah. The more hands off your marble rye.
Well, I was curious, Eric.
By the way, why wasn't Raymond a choice in there?
Oh, yeah, Raymond.
Well, everyone compares Seinfeld and friends.
He's terrible at this.
Well, I was curious, Eric. You told me recently you had met with somebody who had never left the country. And I was sort of curious for both of you to talk about what is the importance of traveling, of leaving your hometown or leaving where you're from to see the rest of the world?
I just don't see how you could live.
I'm going to let you redeem yourself on this question.
I don't see how you could actually live. I think you're better off never going to college, never going to any school, but traveling than you are. English is irrelevant if you don't know what other countries are doing, don't you think?
All right. Now I think you're brilliant.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly right. There's no more mind-expanding thing we can do on this planet than travel. And my whole thesis is that the world might be a little better if we all could experience a tiny bit of someone else's experience, right? We wouldn't be in the, I want to say, shithole we are right now, then if we all just opened our mind a tiny bit to other people and what other people experience. Empathy, right? Also, good ideas come from other places.
Yeah.
Guess what? That's a newsflash for people.
I mean,
no, I know. I sit here and I know everything. And I watch a TV program that tells me I know everything. And my worst fears are confirmed nightly. And I'm never going to grow as a human being because I don't have to. That's called an idiot.
Right.
You get smarter if you travel a little bit. I'm not saying everybody has to travel and spend their money, you know, going overseas, you know, especially those of us who don't have enough to go overseas yet. But you can travel in your own town. There are ethnic restaurants down the street that you're afraid of. You go by. What do I know about Peruvian food? I'm not going in there. So look on your phone. See what the menu is at the place. That's all. It's a big deal. Look. Hey, chicken and rice. I like that. Yes, you like that. Go in there and taste it. You know what the worst thing that's going to happen is? I don't like it. Okay, don't eat it again. But the tasting is its own reward.
Right. I find that so hard to do, though, to actually be a tourist in my own town. Do you find that?
Love nothing more.
How
I
do you do it?
Almost every day or night to try a place. Now, yes, I have favorites I go back to, but there's nothing I love more than discovering something great.
Right.
And you're never going to discover it if you don't try it.
Right. I mean, I don't think we can finish on a better note than that, do you, Jeff?
Yeah, that's great.
And yeah. Those of you at home, you now have a directive. You have to go try something new in order to listen.
Do you think that for a person who's never played golf, that trying it once hooks you, or you have to really commit to spending a lot of time learning it, like skiing or something, where you have to have real lessons and really commit to it? Or do you? Is this a high that you get immediately?
For me, yeah. It was immediate.
Really? I just hit one shot. Picking up the club and doing it.
Yeah, I hit one shot, and I was just, I was willing to tackle the stereotypical resistance I had after that one shot.
What happened? Like one shot, like you swung, and you saw the ball go way further than you thought possible. Was that the high?
That's partially it. Yeah. I mean, well, there's a thing that happens similar to like dancing or ballet. When you hit the ball where you're supposed to on the golf club, you actually don't feel the ball hit the club because it's a sweet spot. It resonates in a frequency that it actually is pleasant in your bones.
Ah.
Yeah. And it feels very centered. And I mean, you know, it would be like, you know, when you hit a bat in a ball, baseball.
Yes.
Yeah, and so that happened, and then I was immediately addicted.
I can't do that either.
What? No, yeah, you can.
Hit a bat with a ball. Hit a ball with a bat. See that? That's how bad I am. Yeah. I've been doing it backwards.
You tape the bat to the wall and throw the ball at it. Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know,
eating is my sport.
Yeah, that's a good sport.
I'm good at it.
Yeah. Do you have to go to the gym with all this eating? You're very fit.
Every day.
What do you do?
Not if I don't have a trainer. I try to see the trainer once or twice a week. But then I have a regimen that I do, cardio one day, weights another day, something every day. Have to. And
or
I also
else.
Pick my spots. I'm not eating like crazy every day.
Right. Or else what? Or else you kind of just get, what do you turn into to the Jabba the Hutt or what? Or you just sort of get depressed?
I was a writer, right? So in the writer's room, you're in there all day and sometimes all night. The only sunshine coming in that room is the menu, right? What are we going to order from? And that becomes your salvation, your entertainment, your only break. And I gained 30 pounds.
Whoa.
Yeah, I was 30 pounds heavier about 20 years ago.
But you made a lot of money, so.
That doesn't matter if you're fat.
But that's the old stereotype, right?
Nobody still wants to look at you.
Hundreds of years
what
ago.
What about the expression, all you have is your health?
I've never heard that.
If you can't walk up steps, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, you're a millionaire.
Very true.
Right? You're a fat wub, but
you can get an
walk
elevator.
Up the steps.
You get the elevator, escalator. You get a one-story house, 3-acre plot of land.
No, you got to have it all. You got to have your health, and you got to have you got to work hard, get the means to travel. And then I did something like on the Amalfi Coast. There was this 45-minute step climb up to what they call the Trail of the Gods. Okay? And I actually, this was a couple of years ago, I did this on vacation. I did it myself, and I was so, I just like, thanked my lucky stars that my legs still worked so that I could experience this, right? That my heart didn't give out halfway up the steps.
Yeah.
And then when I got to the top, it was so rewarding. That's why, you know, you have to have a tiny bit of discipline.
Yeah. Do you do it when you travel? Do you actually get the time to work out when you travel?
I make time.
You do?
Even shooting the show, I make time.
Wow.
If I have a 7 a.m. call, I'm up at 6 a.m. and I do the workout.
Are you really?
Yes.
That's impressive.
I know
what that's like.
I feel I got to a point where tell me if this is true for you. We all have habits. We all have habits. Some are bad, right?
Some more than others.
Some are worse than others, right? So my bad habit would be sitting and watching TV and eating an entire bag of potato chips. Very easy for me to do.
Yeah, I can do that.
Easy.
Yeah.
Easy for a lot of us.
We could do that together.
So what if you turn that bad habit into a good habit? In other words, just replace it. It had to be replaced with something because we're habitual. We need that thing. So I've now reached the point where if I don't work out, I feel weird or bad or something's not right or my day is not complete. If I travel all day, let's say I could take a 7 a.m. flight to New York. The moment I land at the hotel in New York, I'm in the gym.
Whoa.
That moment. I said, I'm taking my own bags up. I can't even wait for you to bring me my bags. I'm taking it myself because I have to hit the gym. Why? Because it's all planning the day.
Yeah.
So if I'm there at 4 and I'm going to eat dinner at 6:30, I got to get that workout in between.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I want to shower. So I want to have dinner. So to pay for that dinner, I got to do the workout.
I admire you. That's impressive. I don't. That's
I'm, can you get a workout playing golf?
Well, you walk about 5, 6, 7 miles.
Not Trump. He's in the friggin' car.
Yeah. Not some. I don't take a cart. But it's not a tremendous workout. It's a long walk, but I prefer, you know.
But you have to have muscles to hit the ball, don't you?
No, you need really flexibility. Not? Muscles support the movement you need to make with your spine and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You'll some amount of weight training, resistance training is really good for your body.
So how do old, fat, white guys, how are they, what do they got that?
Money? What do they got? I mean, they don't have much.
Hit
the
ball.
The golf swing ranges for everybody. I mean, for some, you don't need a large mobility. You know, there's a lot of guys who are very old who have really weird golf swings that still play very well. I mean, they say, you know, the best player from 100 yards and in is the best player. So a lot of times it's not about hitting the ball 300 yards. It's about really delicate shots around the green and essentially being able to make up for mistakes from the fairway.
Like pool.
Yeah. It pools like that? Like billiards?
That's what I'm thinking.
Huh.
Aiming, shooting.
Right.
Right? Finesse.
It's a more delicate game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like once the balls are on the table.
Right.
It sounds like we're talking about something else.
Once your balls are on the table.
That sounds like Hollywood negotiating.
Please, you want to make sure nobody's laughing.
Do you have a negotiating tactic for the business of Hollywood? And to leave us with?
Yes, I do. It's the best advice I ever got in my life about anything. You ready?
Okay.
It's from Ed Weinberger, who is a great old showrunner of the past. He's still with us, but he was a showrunner on things like the Mary Tyler Moore Show and Taxi, right? The Cosby Show of the 80s. Can't say that name anymore. But he gave me this advice. Do the show you want to do, because in the end, they're going to cancel you anyway.
That's really good.
That's everything. That's a life lesson.
Yeah.
We all get canceled one day.
Whoa, wait. I just got it.
Do the show you want to do. Does it make sense? It doesn't mean don't listen to anybody. Don't, you know, say no to every note that you got. No, listen to the notes.
Yeah.
But when you're done getting that input, think about it and then do the show you want to do. Because, you know, when they cancel you, you can't say, but I took all your notes. You're canceled anyway.
Yeah, it's too late.
Yes.
Wow. Thank you, Phil.
You're welcome.
Everyone check out Somebody Feed Phil.
Yes.
Follow him at phil.rosenthal.
Phil.rosenthal. Instagram, Phil Rosenthal. Twitter.
Oh, and
Phil Rosenthal World coming to the web.
Yeah, it'll be there. Thanks for your time.
I love this, Eric.
It was good.
I'll talk to you again anytime, without a microphone.
All right, everybody. Have a great week. Thank you.